Okay, repeat after me from verse 1 as I read it with the Sendhi broken. Remember the verse, from the first verse is the student coming to the teacher, this guru-shishya relationship, dialogue, asking to know really who is behind all of this. Who is the, because of whom are all of my organs of action and sense organs working. So just repeat, because I want you to kind of learn the Sendhi, then we'll just repeat 1 and 2.
Kena
ishitam
ishitam
patati
patati
preshitam
preshitam
manaha
manaha
kena pranaha
pranaha
pratamaha
pratamaha
praiti
praiti
yuktaha
yuktaha.
Now I'm going to do more than one word. Kena ishitam vacham imam vadanti.
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 Chakshuhu.
Chakshuhu.
Shrotram ka'u.
Shrotram ka'u.
Shrotram kaha'u.
Shrotram kaha'u.
Devaha yunakti. Then, the teacher replying and answering his question. Shrotrasya shrotram.
Shrotrasya shrotram.
Manasaha manaha yat.
Manasaha manaha yat.
Vachaha havacham.
Vachaha havacham.
Sahau.
Sahahu
pranasya
pranasya
pranaha
pranaha
chakshushaha
chakshushaha
chakshuhu
chakshuhu
atimuchya dhiraha
atimuchya dhiraha
praitya asmat
praitya asmat
lokat amritaha bhavanti
lokat amritaha bhavanti.
Just, I mentioned briefly last night in the satsang, this sadhana and asadhana. Where the what is sadhana is, something is sadhana. It means that it's in common. Say there's a whole group of things, and there's one thing that sadhana is a common characteristic of that group, so to speak. And the asadhana would be all of those things which are unique. So say in this instance, why we're using these terms, or Swamiji's using them, terms in his commentary, there's a list of things that are put in the genitive. So let's just look at that. Shrotrasya, that means of the ear. That sya is genitive. So of the ear. Look at manasaha, of the mind. Vachaha, of the vak, of the speech. Pranasya, of the prana. Chakshushaha, of the eyes. Okay? Those are all genitives. And so each one of these genitives is, you know, of the ear, of the mind, of the speech, of the prana, of the eyes. The eyes are asadhana, because the eyes are definitely different than the mind, which is different from the prana, which is different from the ears, etc., which is different from the speech. These are all asadhana. They're just individual things, each one different from the other. Okay. Now, if I say, now we look at the nominatives, the things that are put in the first case. So, shrotram, the ear, okay, shrotram. That's nominative, first case, 1-1. So if I say shrotrasya shrotram, this shrotram is going to be sadharanam, because he's only, the student is only asking by whom, not by whom plural. By whom are all of these instruments, but because of whom, by whose desire or because of whose presence, right, are all of these things functioning, right? So it's not by how all of these presences, not all of these presences, all of these things are functioning. By desired by whom or by whose presence all of these things are functioning. Right? And so now if you look at the shrotram in the nominative, so you've got shrotram, the ear, nominative, manas, the mind, as the nominative, means the subject of the sentence. Then you have vacham, which in the commentary they'll say vacham is being used with what we call chandas. It's being used that way in the Upanishads in kind of an ancient Sanskrit. But in classical Sanskrit, this vacham would actually be vak. Why I think they bring this up in the commentary, because if you're using the dictionary or something and you know the declension of vak, you say, well, what is vacham? That sounds like an accusative case. It should be vak. And so they'll say in the commentary, it is vak. Vacham, by that they mean in classical Sanskrit, the Sanskrit that we learn, it's vak. So this vacham, meaning vak, speech also is in the nominative case. And pranaha, nominative. See that pranasya pranaha? That's in the nominative case. Then chakshushaha, chakshuhu, the eye, is in the nominative case. Okay. Then, so now, let's put them together. If I say this, and you look at all of the genitives of the ear, of the mind, etc., as being what we call asadharanam, they're all unique. I mean, my ears, the function of my ears is different than the function of my eyes, and it's different than the function of my mind. But what if I say this, the ear of the ear, the one who is, the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the speech of the speech, the prana of the prana, the eye of the eyes, we say. So now, this, the one who is the ear of the ear and the mind of the mind and the prana of the prana and speech of the speech, etc., that one is what we call sadharana. That's the invariable. So, the same one who is the ear of the ear is the mind of the mind, is the speech of the speech, is the hearing of the hearing, right? The ear of the ear. So now we're talking about only one thing, you know. Now you could say, there can be an objection that comes up there that would say, well, actually, this is one of the first objections that the student can think or ask. Well, I see that clearly in terms of all of these sense organs, you know, being, and even the organs of action, which the vak, speech, represents, all of these are dependent upon the mind, right? The mind is the ruler of all of these. If your mind isn't operational, if your mind isn't thinking about moving your hand or wanting to go somewhere, then you won't be going anywhere. It doesn't have any vritti to go, so it just stays here. Or if your mind is daydreaming, right, and your eyes are open and your ears are open, they're not functioning. And not only that, all of these organs, say just look at the sense organs, every one of these unique, what we call asadharanam, every one of these unique sense organs, my eyes and my ears and my sense of smell, my sense of taste, all five, my sense of touch, you know, all of them come into the mind, right? They're all instruments that give me a vritti, but the vritti takes place in the mind, right? And so my mind becomes the sadharana factor, the common factor which all of these sense organs, for instance, are using. And so then I can say, okay, I'm the sadhana, I'm the common element for all of these. So I'm the ear of the ear, you know, I'm the ear of the ear, I'm the eye of the eye, etc. But the problem here is that it also says the one who's the mind of the mind. Because the mind also is an instrument which is objectified and which is known. And just like my sense organs are different from your sense organs, my eyes are different from your eyes, my ears are different from your ears, you know, my mind is different from your mind. And so even though on one level it's because of my mind, because of the consciousness of my mind as a conscious being, my mind as a conscious being then is the one who utilizes these five sense organs and also receives them, receives their objects, the objects upon which they land, it receives in the mind. So if I'm looking at you right now, I'm actually experiencing my direct immediate experience is a vritti, is a thought modification that my sense organs are giving me. All five sense organs are giving me this thought modification because I can tell, well, I can feel myself seated on the, you know, there's a sense of touch there. I'm seated on this asana. I can feel the coolness of the air. Whatever scent is there, I can smell. So all of them are coming in together, giving me this particular vritti. So I am, in a sense, the ear of the ear and the mind of, and the sight of the sight, all of these, the eyes of the eyes, all of this. Because without me, these things don't take place. Right? Just imagine, what are your sense organs going to do without your mind? So your mind, in reference to you, to this particular body-mind sense organs, is sadhana. It's the one, it's the common denominator, it's the common factor in all perception and all organs of action, we can say, it's the common denominator. But then the mind also, he says, is the mind that I am, that one for whom all of this is the mind of the mind. And so we can't actually, if we think of the mind, which can be looked at if appropriately as sadhana, as the common factor, the invariable necessary for all of these perceptions. But then the conscious mind also, you have to ask, who is this mind for that uses all of these sense organs and organs of action that kind of is the conscious in the sukshma sharira being sattva? It's the conscious element that uses all of these. But then the mind itself is known. The mind itself takes on the ahankara. It takes on the ahankara, as does every organ of action, all the karmendriyas, all of the sense organs, they all take on the ahankara, either as an attribute of me or as me itself. You know, I, the conscious being, am the one because of whom, I am the conscious being who am the one because of whom all of these sense organs work. Talking about my mind. Without my mind, my mind is in deep sleep, these sense organs aren't working at all. The organs of action are not working at all. And so I, the mind, must be the conscious entity for whom all of these are. But then, who is the mind for? Who is the mind for? Do you think that the mind, with all of its functions, it's like the mind itself is a conglomerate, do you think that the mind is just, with all of its various functions, like it can, it utilizes the sense organs and forms vrittis from the sense organs. It has the capacity to remember. It has the citta for memory. It has the manas taking in all of, being kind of the receptacle of all of your emotions and all of your doubts and all of your confusions, all of your imaginations, and really all of the vrittis that come in from the sense perception. It's the receptacle of all of that. It's the one who has meditative experiences. It's the one that has sukha and dukkha. So who are all of these experiences for? You know, it's a conglomerate. The mind is a conglomerate. It has many different types of vrittis, you know. And all of those vrittis that are taking place, who are they taking place for? You say, well, they're just taking place for me. Correct. They're taking place for me. Who is that me? Is the memory for the memory? Is the buddhi for the buddhi? You know? Is the emotion for the emotion? Is the perception for the perception? All the functions of the mind, are they for the mind itself? And so then the mind must be somebody who then has, the mind itself has all of these things. There has to be a differentiation there. So there has to be a mind that then has all of these functions. So there's a mind of the mind which is utilizing all of these functions. And so I am the big mind for the little mind. But we're saying it differently. It's not the big mind for the little mind. That would go into an infinite regress, because that mind also has to have a mind for whom that mind is, that's utilizing all of the functions that the mind has. So that goes into an infinite regress. And that isn't the point. The point is that you have a mind. Who is that you that as though has a mind? It is me. Me is what? Me. This very simple me, the conscious being that we call me, that I label as myself. In fact, in this verse, and what the teacher is trying to do is get rid of these big words. Big words like, it is the Atma. Because I'll show you the problem. If you say that the self is the conscious being, but put it in a different language, which they're not using for a reason. The self, the Atma, the conscious being, right, is the one who the ears and the mind and the sense organs, the ears and the eyes, etc., and the prana and the sense organs and the organs of action, the one for whom all of this is for, is you, is the Atma. The problem with that, then, because until you have self-knowledge, there will be this problem. There is an Atma, and there are the sense organs and the mind and all of these various things that are in service of that Atma. But then Atma becomes, yourself becomes one of the things. That's the problem. The Atma is not another one of the things. And the Atma, the self, is not an object in the same order of reality. It's not an object, first of all. If you say it's an object, then just like your sense organs and sense objects exist within time and space, within the creation, your organs of action and the things that they grasp and what they're walking on, etc., belongs and exists within this world that we find ourselves in. And so now, if the self is differentiated from those things, the Atma is differentiated, then it becomes something other than these things. And then we have Dvaita, we have the self, we have this self, this conscious being, which is now differentiated, like we do in Drik Drisha Viveka. It's one of the scary things about Drik Drisha Viveka that has to be handled, because it's very easy for the self to become differentiated from the body, mind, sense organs, and my experience, as though they have a separate reality, as though they're something else. And so he doesn't initially, even though in these first few verses, the teacher is not using the word Atma at all. He is trying to make the student recognize that there is no distance between the ear and the self. There is no distance. So he won't say there is the Atma, who is, you know, the one because of whom all these things are. He'll say it is the ear of the ear. It is this eye of the eye. It's the prana of the prana. The vak, the speech of the speech. Going through the mind of the mind. Going through the entire upadi. The entire upadi means the jiva upadi. You know, the mind, the sense organs, the organs of action, the prana. Going through all of that, I'm the prana of the prana, etc. The mind of the mind, the ear of the ear, the seat of the eye of the eye. What happens when you say that is, first of all, I am not the one that they're being talking about, like the ear of the ear. What is the distance between the ear of the ear and the ear? You have the ear, and you have the ear of the ear. Where is the ear of the ear located, would you guess? It can't be away from the ear, because it's the ear of the ear, right? The eye of the eye can't be away from the eye because it's the eye of the eye, the mind of the mind, the vak, the speech of the speech. Where's the distance between the genitive and the nominative? Where's the distance between those two? Okay, so now think of this in terms of your own experience, or what if the teacher, as these unfoldments in are coming along, differentiates your Atma, yourself, from this body, mind, sense organs, upadi? What would that mean? That's a really, actually, a very scary thought, because I don't want to be somebody else. Who wants to be somebody else? Some Atma, some self, that's different from me. That's kind of horrifying. Who cares? It's like a problem that many of us have had, say, with the concept, which is not a Vedantic concept, by the way, but we use it, soul, the soul that goes to heaven. Do you want to be that soul? So there's a soul that goes to heaven. Who is that soul? Now, if for you, in your understanding of the word soul, it means the me that is here, that has this body, mind, sense organs, the conscious being that is me. Even conscious being, that's too far removed. Who is a conscious being? You have to say, if we use this language, you have to be careful, because I want to be me. And is the me that you're talking about, is conscious being a synonym? For, you know, synonym means conscious being. When I use this language, I'm only talking about me. That's what conscious being means, is me. And so if I say, you, this person that you are here, you go to heaven. It's like if I say, you know, you are going, you're, I know that in a couple of weeks you're flying to San Francisco. You know? Yes, I'm flying to San Francisco. So I'm going there, that's fine. I'm going there, I'm happy I'm going there. Now what if we say, and you know what, and when you drop this body, you, you know, will transmigrate according to your karmas. You'll have lots of different experiences, and then you'll take another body, like you might take another dress, you know, a new dress, because your dress is all ragged and old. You have to time for a new one. And so that karma has run out, and now you will take another body, a fresh body, and to pick up where you left off. You will pick up where you left off. Because remember, at the time that you die, when at that time that you die, the you, the person that you are with all of the karmas that you've gained, all of the capacities, the samskaras, the dharma, adharma mix that you are, that you're holding, kind of like your bag, you're holding this bag of karmas, who you are at the time that you die, those, that person, that you, will then attract to yourself all of these variety of karmas that fit who you are now so that you can continue on. It's just like here we are today, and then based upon who I am right now today, I have an inkling, you know, of what I'll probably be doing tomorrow. Because it's me. I know I will be doing this tomorrow most likely. So I don't have any sense, when we're just talking about me, and we say, you know, when they say this word Atma or Brahman, really, they're only talking about me. That's it. They're all, Brahman is a synonym for me. It's not something else. It's a, you a synonym? I mean, it's a big word. You have to understand who you actually are, but we're only talking about you. And so this teacher, this rishi, is very particular that you don't separate yourself as something, some conceptual Atma who is limitless Brahman. Is it not some conceptual self out there? It's the you that is right here, right now, that because of whom these eyes are enlivened. I am the one because of whom these eyes are enlivened. I am the one because of whom these eyes enjoy conscious being. That is me. I am the conscious being, not the eyes. If I lose the eyes, nothing happens to me. Something happens to the eyes. But me, this conscious being, I illumine these eyes. I am the one who is the ear of the ears, I am the one because of whom the ears hear, because of whom the ears exist. I am the one because of whom the vrittis are known. The vrittis exist, they are known. I am the one who is the mind of the mind. Without me, this mind is just inert. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't even exist when we get down to it. But it doesn't contribute anything because it has no consciousness. I am the conscious being. And in my presence, these things all function. My speech functions. What if there's no consciousness or existence in reference to my speech? I am the speech of the speech. Because without me, there is no speech. Just take away my consciousness, not somebody else's consciousness. I am a conscious being, it's me. So take me away from the speech. What will happen? There is no speech then. It's just dead as a doornail. So take me away from the speech. Take me away from the prana. What makes the prana, prana? Yeah. That vital force, that consciousness, that existence that comes into the body and leaves the body. Yeah. So who does that belong to? It doesn't belong to the body. The body is borrowing it as though. It comes into this body as a nice dress in order to let me fulfill my karmas. And so how to recognize yourself in the reality, in terms of the reality of who you actually are. And so this, by saying like the ear of the ear, the eyes of the eyes, the mind of the mind, etc., the speech of the speech, then I have to come close. I become very close, and all of this becomes very close to me, not separate from me. So this is going to work. This is just how he's starting. This is going to work its way into these terms that we have, like satya, mitya. Anything that is mitya is very close to the satyam. We can't even say very close. That's too far away. You know, say it's very, very close. The mitya is very close to the satyam. It's not very close. Yet there is no distance whatsoever. No distance whatsoever. Like, what is the distance? Or you can say, oh, the pot. It's so close to the clay. It's so close to the clay. No. It's not close to the clay, you know. There is no distance whatsoever. In fact, really, it is only the clay. But then it has this form. But the form has no being at all. Zero. The only thing that's really there is clay, but here we have this pot. So here, that understanding of satya mitya is what is happening here, actually. I experience no distance whatsoever from the standpoint of these upadis. What distance do you experience between your sight and you? Is you're back here somewhere and the sight is here somewhere? There's no distance whatsoever. You know, there's a distance in terms of your body, like these eyes are in my body, and my ears are over here, you know, and my hands are over here. But what about distance from me? And now if I say me, we have to understand when I have other words I can use for me, like I am a conscious being. But don't think that, oh, the me is being defined now as a conscious being. What do you mean by conscious being? No. You can't say that. That is getting us into trouble. The only way we know what we mean by conscious being is because I am a conscious being. The experience of myself as a conscious being is what we mean by conscious being. There's no conscious being out here. Like, what does she mean by consciousness or conscious being? Can you show me some consciousness so that I know exactly what we mean by consciousness? Can you give me a sample of some consciousness? No. Or also, if I say I am, means I am, I exist as a conscious being, and what does she mean by that? Who's going to answer that question? Because you can't look at some existence. We don't have a subject-object relationship with existence. we also don't have a subject-object relationship with consciousness. So then we just have to say, I am a conscious being. What does she mean by that? Well, let me just check out here. Yes, I'm conscious. That's true. Yes, I exist. That's true. But there's no objectification of existence. It's just a recognition of the conscious, existent being that I am. These words have to resolve into me, into my own self-experience. So it's a big difference. Because otherwise there's a difference. There's a distinction, and our mind is looking around or looking, let's travel inside. Let's try travel inside to find this conscious being that is actually who I am. I don't know that, but let's try to find it so that I can find myself. No, there's no finding yourself. There's no fun, because then we're traveling through some inner space in order to find something that is other than me so that I can have an experience of this thing that is other than me. So there's no travel here. If I say me, and the teacher says you are the conscious being, you are the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the one because of whom the mind functions, the one because of whom the ear hears, the one because of whom the eyes see. You are that one. You are that conscious being, that me, which is a conscious being, because of whom all of these things are known. So now we get closer and closer to the meaning of the word. The meaning of the word can only be recognized. Recognized not as an object, but as you. So that's why these words, like even conscious being, have to become, to understand the word, you have to say, oh, she says, I'm a conscious being, this me, the mind of the mind, the ear of the ear. Am I a conscious being or not? Do I exist or not? Yes, I exist. Do you see that existence? No, of course I don't see existence. Existence is not something I can objectify as an object, but do I exist? Am I here? Am I an existent being? Yes, I am. Okay, that's exactly the existence we're talking about, nothing else. Am I a conscious being? Well, I'm not inert. I'm not unconscious. It's because of me that things are known. I experience myself as a conscious being. That's what we're talking about. There's no definition out here. Because there's no way to look at or objectify or use your sense organs to take a look at some consciousness. You are that, and it is self-evident. Even as an ajnani, you take for granted yourself. You take for granted this me. You take for granted that you exist. You take for granted that you are a conscious being. That's not something that anybody has to prove to you. Prove it, that I'm a conscious being. Prove it? Okay. I can prove it with some questions. Do you know, if I say, tell me if this is true for you or not. Are you inert? Are you an inert being? Are you a being who lacks consciousness? No. Okay. Do you exist or you don't exist? No, I exist. How do you know I exist? How do you know you exist? Well, because I exist. How can you tell me I don't exist? I'm here, I exist. How can you tell me I'm inert, that I'm not conscious, when I'm obviously conscious and you are obviously conscious too? So the existence, my being, and the fact that I am a conscious being is kind of the bottom line. You have to prove that I'm not a conscious being. Say, or somebody says, no, I don't think I'm a conscious being. I don't exist, I'm not a conscious being. And we have to go into a big analysis of how we're using the language. What would be more appropriate is, yes, I'm a conscious being, but, yes, I know I am I have consciousness, yes, and I know I exist. There's a big but. The but is, does my consciousness, is it like a product, or does it belong to my body? And so when my body dies, the consciousness will go along with it. When this body, the existence that I experience, is that something that's given to me by my body? If that's the case, the existence that I am, will come to an end when this body comes to an end. That's a legitimate question, you know, because I see dead people also. People who are dead, they don't have consciousness and they don't have existence. The body has existence, but it's a dead body. The pranas have gone. The sukshma sharira is gone, you know. And so it's not a question of me being an existent conscious being. It's that, can I be without that or not? Or is that something which is a product? Or is it something which is the ear of the ear and the mind of the mind and the body of the body, etc.? The touch of the touch. That's what we have to realize. Not that I am a conscious being. It's just, what's the difference between the conscious being that I am now and the conscious being if the body dies? What's the difference between the conscious being that I am and the conscious being that you are? You know? And so the Upanishad is not trying to prove to you that you are a conscious being, because that is self-evident. We take the fact as bottom line fact that I am a conscious being, because that is my self-evident experience. Self-evident experience. It's not something which I can prove or disprove. How can I prove or disprove it? Because it's not something that I can objectify or we can know as an object in the world. I can't prove or disprove it. I know it. I don't have to prove it or disprove it. It's a given. But, you know, I don't know what the relationship of me, this conscious being, is to this body, mind, sense organs, to Ishwara, to each one of us. That is the problem. And so now, when we're teaching this, if you look at it, what he says here starts out by saying, trying to answer this Kaneshitam, the one who in whose presence or because of whose nature, because of whose will, etc., because of whom, that what does the mind fall on its objects? Does the ear hear its sound? All those things. He says, you know, that one that you're looking for, right, Yed, is the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the speech of the speech, the prana of the prana. There's another, just in these two lines, another little, and then it goes also the eye of the eye. There's another important thing here, because from the standpoint of the teacher, he's revealing the nature of the self as really as Brahman. But in doing this, and this is true throughout the Upanishads, the word shrotra is a neuter, is neuter. So we would have the ear of the ear. Now shrotram is a neuter noun. So are we saying that that consciousness or whoever the that one that you're seeking is neuter? Is it neuter? And he says, and he goes, the mind of the mind. Okay, manas also is neuter. So we've got two neuters there, right? But then he says, the vak of the vach, that's feminine actually. I think vak is feminine. Oh, so is Bhagavan feminine? Is the consciousness feminine? Or is that me feminine? But then he says, pranasya pranaha saha. That's masculine. So what gender? He's switching genders. Am I masculine? Or am I feminine? Or am I neuter? Is this one that you're talking about, this me, the one that you're trying to answer my question, what gender am I? You know? Because he's changing all the genders. He's changing all the genders so that you know that you are not a gender. Consciousness is not masculine or feminine or neuter. It must be masculine or feminine, right? And for me, is it feminine? And for all the men, is it masculine? No, it isn't. You mean it's neuter? No. It's not neuter either. Consciousness is not neuter. It's not masculine, it's not feminine, it's not neuter. It's consciousness. It's the one, you know, that is the ear of the ear, the eye of the eye, the feminine of the feminine, the masculine of the masculine, the neuter of the neuter. It itself is not any of those things. So that's really nice understanding to think of your being, and it's very interesting. Say if you do just a meditation, just being with yourself, and you say, you know, is this me? You know, I'm feminine, so is this me feminine? Is it masculine? Is it neuter? Do these words really apply? I mean, they certainly apply to the body. They apply in a, they don't apply really to the sukshma sharira, because the subtle body takes on all different genders. It just depends on your karma. It can even become an animal. And so it can be masculine or feminine. And if there's neuter genders out there somewhere, it can be that too, depending upon the gender of the body. But does it have a gender? This is just subtle body. Does it have a gender? If it has a gender, then is it going to be taking bodies that are only of that gender? No. It takes bodies, whatever the karma is, it'll take that body. So sometimes you'll be, depending upon the upadhi you take, you'll be a man, you'll be a woman, you'll be a neuter, whatever that would be, you know. But you're not going to be any of them because you take all three of them, if there is such a thing as a neuter. You take all three. You're sometimes a man, sometimes a woman, sometimes a neuter. Neutral. So even for the sukshma sharira, there's no gender. What about for the self, conscious, the consciousness, which the sukshma sharira enjoys, or the existence? Is there a masculine existence, a feminine existence, a neuter existence? Is there a feminine consciousness, a masculine consciousness? We can say, kind of, we can use that words, those words within duality. Yeah, that's a very masculine way of being. It's a very masculine way of thinking. That's a feminine way of thinking. A lot of that's total BS, but we do have some of that that you can relate to in a real way, you know. But what about yourself? What about the sukshma sharira? All of that falls apart. So do you think of Brahman? And this is just an aside from where you are at right now. If you've been thinking of Brahman because it's a neuter noun, as neuter, it's a neuter noun, you know. But then Chaitanya, Chitta, I can't remember for sure. I better look those up. Chaitanya is Chaitanya Hara Chaitanya. But there are many, many words. For the Atma is masculine. Atma is masculine. Brahman is neuter. Some words like Chaitanya and Chitta are feminine or masculine or neuter. So they do that on purpose, Swamiji jokingly says. They do that on purpose just so that you don't get stuck on any particular gender for yourself. You're not a gender. You're conscious being. Conscious being isn't a man or a woman or a neuter. It's also not a human being. It's not an animal either. It's not an animal. It's not a tree. You know, it's not a rock or a stone. It's not a mosquito. And yet, from the standpoint of the rock or the tree and the mosquito, then that rock is maybe neutral, neutered, you know, and the mosquito is whatever it is, whatever that one happens to be, and the animals are whatever they are. And so from the standpoint of the upadhi, you take on these words, whatever the upadhi. If you have a feminine upadhi, then you take on feminine role. If you're a human being, then you get to be a human being. If you're an animal, you get to be an animal. But that's only from the standpoint of the upadhi, not from the standpoint of me. Because next life I may be an animal, or I may be a fish, or I may be a human, or I may be a devata, depending upon my karmas. And I may be a male devata or a feminine, female devata, or male or female mosquito. You don't know. This just depends on the karma. But it's not something that is defining me. And so here, by going through all of this, he then says, the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear, etc. Then he says, Atimucha dhiraha. Atimucha here means being liberated or being released from these things. From what? Being released from the ahankara. The ahankara that identifies with all of these upadhis. Because if I, you can take this ear of the ear, eye of the eye, touch of the touch, hands of the hands, feet of the feet, body of the body, it could go on and on and on. I am not the object. I am the one who gives the satchit. I give me. my being to that object. That object, I imbibe, to that upadi, I give conscious being, I give myself, I give me to that. And so then, that enjoys me. But that enjoying me, having me as its being, as its sut, as its chit, enjoying that and not having knowledge that I take on all of these attributes. I am this body, I am this mind, I am such and such intelligence or stupidity or whatever, tired or awake. I take on all kinds, whatever the adjectives of this body, mind, sense organs, these upadis are, I take those on as myself. Atimucha means the one, the diraha, the one now who knows, means you have to bring in as a lakshana, nyatwa, having known all of this, having recognized the truth of this, then what? That wise person, atimucha, having given up the ahankara, being freed from the ahankara, where myself is totally identified with that. My body, mind, sense organs totally depend upon me. I am the one who enlivens the ear. I am the one who enlivens the speech. I enliven the eyes. I'm the ear of the ear, the eye of the eye, the prana of the prana, the mind of the mind. I am the one who enlivens those things. They depend totally upon me. But if I have ajnanam, then I just take myself to be that, because it is my being that gives being to all of this. And I am the one who's giving being to all of this, but I don't have any viveka to discriminate all of these things from me, and so I have the ahankara just naturally takes place. I am this body. I am this mind. I am the prana. I depend upon the prana. I am my ears. I am able to hear well. I am my eyes. I see well. Or my eyes are getting a little dimmer with age and I have to get glasses because I don't see as well as I used to see. That's all ahankara, 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 endless ahankara, endless identification with the upadi. The diraha is the one that has fallen off. Ati mucha. Ati means completely mucha, completely freed from this ahankara. Means what? That the ahankara becomes mitya. It's not that it goes away. I'm walking to the store. Right? It's not that the ahankara goes away. It's just I know completely what I mean when I say I'm thinking about this. I'm walking to the store. That's all. I know exactly what I'm saying. Not that all of a sudden my ajnanam has come back and I now once again take myself to be identified with it. That does not happen. So atimucha, that diraha, the one who now understands and has self-knowledge, that one who, having dropped the ahankara, having been liberated from these false identifications, then he says, that diraha amrataha bhavanti, those dear, it's in plural, those dirahas, all of you, having gained this knowledge, you become immortal. You mean you weren't immortal? You become free from death. Mrita means dead, somebody who's died. Amrita means somebody who doesn't die. Did you used to die and now you don't die? Previously, before you gained this knowledge, you died. But now that you've gained this knowledge, you don't die. No, that's not correct. That is not the correct answer. You've never died. You've never been born. You've never died. Consciousness doesn't come into being and go out of being, as we'll see as we go on. You've never died. You've never experienced death at any time. But from the standpoint of this body dies. And so you think you die because of the ahankara identified with this body dies, so I die. But you will never experience death because death does not exist. There won't even be the slightest flicker of a death experience. It does not happen because the self, the you, this me, is not an appendage or attached to this body in any way. This body, mind, sense, organs, creation, it's a totally different order of reality. One order of reality that we call mithya does not affect another order of reality. You know? Like what you're doing in the dream can do all kinds of things in the dream, but when you're in the waking state, those things don't bleed over. You know, all your wonderful accomplishments in the dream, you should think, okay, I did that, so honor me with those great accomplishments. That's who I am. I got all those degrees in the dream. And now here I am with all of those degrees. Does anybody think like that? only mental. It doesn't happen. There's no bleeding over, you know, at all, the different order of reality. Do you take on all of the things that happen in your imagination? Say we have a great imagination, it's wonderful. But when we withdraw the imagination, I'm not left with the imagination. I withdraw the imagination, what happened in the imagination happened in the imagination. And it might be something that I can benefit from doing, using memory and doing like inner child work. I benefit from those things. But the little one inside doesn't come out here into this order of reality and thank me. Inside shall thank me in that imaginal world that is not imaginable and imaginal in a negative sense. The imaginal world is another order of reality, which has its own laws and its own reality. It's not that it's not there, or it's not that it's pretend. It is a different order of reality which I can utilize. I have that at my disposal. You know, I am the Ishwara of my imagination. I can help it to do what it needs to do in order to get rid of some complexes that are living there in the unconscious, which is an imaginal world. The unconscious itself is an imaginal world filled with affect and feeling and images that are expressions like the language of those feelings. You can look at the images, the dreams, the imaginings that come from the affects. That's the language of the affects. It's the language of the unconscious. And so when we go follow those feelings into the unconscious realm, then those feelings can produce, can talk to us. They can produce, and they produce images, you know, that are true to the feeling. That's the thing. They're true to the feeling. They're the language of the feeling. So we have all of this wonderful capacity, but still a different order of reality. And we have the capacity to enter into that order of reality using the mind and the same order of reality. The same order of reality. We're using the same order of reality. I enter into that imaginal order of reality. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing, but it is a different order of reality. You know? And then this physical reality is another order of reality. So understanding that, even though in this realm everything comes into being and goes out of being, in the subtle realm they don't come into being and go out of being in the same way. You know. In terms of the Sukshma Sharira, and from the order of reality of yourself, there is no coming to being or going out of being at all. It's timeless. You are timeless. You've never changed in any way. Non-dual, timeless being. That's a different order of reality. That's what we call Satyam. And so the Dhiras, having known, having gained this knowledge, and be free from the Ahankara, from this I notion, they become immortal. They recognize their nature as being changeless, as being free from time. That's, they become immortal. Having, they used, means they used to think they were mortals because of the Ahankara, because of this I notion. Now they don't think that way anymore. They don't think I'm a mortal. I'm subject to birth and death, because they know the self. The self is timeless. It doesn't have subject to birth. You're not subject to birth and death at all. There's no such thing. So they become immortal. And then it says, Pretya Asmat Lokat. After leaving this loka, after leaving this body, then they become immortal in a different sense. You will never experience death again from the standpoint of the body, mind, sense organs. Because the body will experience death in that it goes away. You won't experience death, the Sukshma Sharira won't experience death, but you'll go through that death process as long as you have a body. Though you won't die, the body will. So you have to go through that process of being separated from the body. So going through that process comes to a total end. That will come to a total end, because there's no one there now to go through that process. Yourself, in the sense, the self, the ahankara not being there, yourself, your sense of self is yourself, is the me. And for me, there never has been and never will be any experience of death, because I'm timeless. And so there's no question of me going through an experience of death. And it's also more involved than that. Knowing my own nature, there's no jiva to try to need to pull some ananda out of the world. Now let's see, it's a time to die. What do I have to do next to what would give me some happiness or some ananda? What kind of birth do I want next? That most likely won't happen. If it happens, you'll get another birth and then you'll pick up the thread where you left off. But what if living jivan mukta means living liberated? Living liberated means that the ananda that I'd sought in the world doesn't need to be sought anymore because it's my own self-experience. It's my own swarupa. I don't have the mind that's creating all of that pressure and tension and needs this and needs that. I'm free of that. My mind is matured. It's not seeking something like we have an expression that states, nobody's trying to get blood from a stone. Anybody hear that expression, blood from a stone? How can I get blood from a stone? Am I going to keep trying? Once I know that for certain that the stone has no blood, am I going to keep trying? I don't think so. Am I going to keep trying for ananda? Let me have this, it'll make me happy. Let me have this, it'll make me happy. When I recognize the source of the ananda, which is myself, have no distance from it. Why am I going to keep trying to take a birth so that I can do this and so that I can do that, when I already am what I want to be? You know, it's just like in a moment of ananda, and everything has gone perfectly, or what a beautiful music, or smile of a child, or whatever brings that, there's this moment of joy, of just joy, or just absorption into the wholeness of your being. Now what do you want to do? Gosh, it's taking a long time. Come on. Just use it for a couple of minutes. You don't want to leave. You don't want to leave your ananda. No. So when you recognize, when the upadis, the body, mind, sense organs, this upadi recognizes, I am that ananda. And then it goes through this emotional lag time. It's this kind of weird forgetfulness, even though you don't forget. It keeps going out and acting like an ajnani. And so you have to understand that, yeah, it does that for some time. You just have to keep pulling your mind back and remembering, poor thing. It has so many memories, it has so many samskaras, that it takes a while for the mind to just love to stay home and let Ishwara unfold. I just love to be with myself, let Ishwara, let my prarabdha unfold. That's really what we call a jivan mukta. When the body dies, then I'm just Ishwara, because there's no identification to continue on. So let me get this and let me have that and let me have that. That's not there anymore. There's no such desire there. When you are with yourself, then that's all you want. So then the body drops, the sukshma sharira drops, they all go back into their elements and you're just Brahma, the Maya Upadi with Ishwara. You're just Ishwara, who is actually who you are. You're just your greater self. You're not an object in the creation who suffers from ajnanam. You're just the Ishwara, where there is no ajnanam, there's Brahman with the Maya Upadi, which is the reality of what is here. You know, so there's two different sorts of liberation. There's the Jivan Mukti, well liberated, the Ahankara is no longer. It's just simply Nitya. I'm no longer asking the world to be something different from what it is. I see the universe as Ishwara and I abide with myself and all is well. And then the body drops as the prarabdha runs out. And then I am no longer subject to birth and death. That's that you become immortal, free of death, which means the death experience will no longer take place from the standpoint of the upadi. Never takes place for you. It doesn't take place from your subtle body either. But as long as you're attached to this upadi, you have to go through the death experience of the upadi as the jiva separates from it. That experience you'll never go through again, because the reason for the upadi is no longer there. So you just abide as your bigger self. Your bigger self is Ishwara. By bigger self, it means the Ishwara upadi is bigger than the jiva upadi. The self is not bigger or smaller. It's exactly the same. That's it.
Om Purnamadah Purnamadah. idam purnat purnamudachyate purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vashishyate om shanti shanti shantihi harihi om shri gurubhyo namaha harihi om